I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sarah Wilson, and this is Wild, a show where we talk with the biggest minds in the world about the ideas that can help us love and save our one wild and precious life together on this planet.
Hello, Wild listeners and Substack viewers, if you happen to be watching this in video format over at Substack. Welcome to another Ask Me Anything, where I answer your questions, a little ad lib. Today, I'm going to answer two questions that a number of you have asked over the last couple of months. So let's see how we go. The first comes, two people, Anna and Ruby, predominantly have been posing these questions. And in fact, there was a bit of a conversation backwards and forwards on it. It's essentially, how do I manage incoming information? How do I sift through it? How do I retain the information? How do I know what's relevant and what needs to be cast aside without getting overwhelmed by it all? The second question is a little related, I guess. It's about how I manage being an activist, which could be interpreted as sort of information output. Once your level of outrage has reached a certain level with the information that's been coming in. And the question is sort of roughly, how do I do it responsibly in a way, I guess, that is effective? So I feel the first question reflects or perhaps suggests that full retention of information is something that should be achieved, that every bit of stimulus, every bit of data needs to be mopped up and retained, that's the sort of the neoliberal imperative, that's what we're all here to do as productive units on the planet today. And I think in some ways that used to be the case. Cachet or your worth as a productive unit in the system was in finding information, being able to go to a library and scan text super fast, be able to speed read, navigate the Dewey system or whatever it was, and be able to deliver the information in a coherent format. Now I think the superpower goes the other way. It's in blocking out the avalanche of information artfully, being able to sift and dissect and discern. So there's a few things that I do, and I suppose they are hacks of sorts. And I probably do have more incomings than the average person just by virtue of the kind of work that I do and the fact that I put myself out there available for incoming information, requests, messages from strangers, a lot of strangers. So I would have around about several thousand direct messages every week easily. That come into my inbox, my direct messages on Instagram and Facebook, and through Substack as well. So what do I do to manage that? I run a very lean inbox. I try to keep it down to, by the end of the day, 10 to 20 emails tops. I basically fly through my emails and I'm quite mercenary. I unsubscribe from a lot of newsletters, from any kind of junk stuff. I stick a lot of stuff in junk if I don't have time to do the stupid unsubscribe process. I delete any emails that are essentially using me but the person is using me as the Googles, right? Like they're asking something that really they could sort out for themselves. And I remember a friend of mine said to me, you know, just because somebody's flung off a quick email requesting some information from me doesn't mean I've got to go and spend an hour researching the answer, because finding an answer is often a lot more work and takes a lot of consideration. And the wonderful thing about people who tend to send those inconsiderate, lazy emails is they will never remember whether you reply or not. And they've probably sent it to about 15 people in the hope that, you know, one of them will stick. I use my inbox as a to-do list. A lot of people say you shouldn't do that. It works for me just to have everything kind of in one forum. I also use my email for storing things that I want to keep for later. So I use the folders. I also start emails. I start composing them so that I know, as a sort of a reminder of priorities, things I need to do, people I need to sort of follow up on or connect with. And I'll just leave them at the bottom of my screen to do at the end of the day or after lunch when I have a slump. Anna, you asked the question, how do I retain the information? And I do tend to also fly through a lot of research. Again, that is particular to the kind of work I do. And I've always done a hell of a lot of research. I read about 15 journals and newspapers every day. And I subscribe to a whole bunch of different Substacks. I listen to probably 5 podcasts a day. So there's a lot of stuff that comes in. And then, of course, I'm always researching for Substacks posts myself, but also for my book. I find the best way to retain information is by handwriting and by also representing the information. So for me, writing a Substack post is a great way for me to retain the information because I've got to actually digest it. The other way that you can do it is by telling someone, actually, you know, that night at the dinner table, telling your family or your friends about what you've learned that day. And I use that technique, hopefully not boring the people around me, but I'm genuinely interested in the stuff I read. And I do find that anything that I tell, I generally retain. Okay. I do have boundaries. I've had to enforce those over the years. I'm not great with it. I am very clear on what forums I am prepared to interact on, and I have to sort of basically just press delete on anyone who interacts on a forum where I've very clearly said that's not where I'm able to go and spend time. It hurts when I see somebody send a big long message to me, somebody from Substack, and they don't want to use the comments section. And I remember Tim, my meditation teacher, said to me, Sarah, the act of actually writing to you, it's done its job. So if somebody has written me this big long heartfelt thing, I shouldn't feel bad about deleting it and not having time to read it. Because I've provided just a forum. I'm just a person that somebody has sent a very considered note to. So that doesn't sit entirely comfortably with me, but I have to do it. Such is the state of the world today. Constantly doing inventory, unsubscribing from newsletters, unsubscribing from people on social media, anything that does not bring me joy. And I also have been experimenting the last week with being off social media, which has just been wonderful. The quality of incoming data on Instagram in particular has just been upsetting me, particularly in the comments sections. I'm going to keep doing that and layering onto that sort of detox process. I can feel it's changing my brain. I am calmer and I'm getting a hell of a lot more work done, good work. So, and to that effect, I will be starting a detox challenge if you'd like to join me. I'll post something on that tomorrow, so Saturday, to start on Sunday. It's just going to be a group experiment to see if we can really cut down on incomings. So it's quite good that I'm answering this question today. At sort of a nutritional level, I drink coffee every morning. I absolutely love it and I love dark chocolate. I've been eating too much of it lately. I have to keep a check on it and I tend to pulse. So Saturdays and Sundays, I don't have coffee or chocolate just to sort of ensure I don't get too addicted, because then it doesn't have the desired effect, does it? I've also been playing around with L-theanine, which is an amino acid, and also GABA. And I'll provide a little bit of information on both of those. I just use powdered form. I use like the minimum dosage cut in half. And when I have that with coffee, it actually makes sure I've got the high without getting jittery. It's working very well for me, particularly with premenopausal brain. I eat a lot of protein. I meditate. If I start to get tired, like no matter where I am on the planet, I'll just go meditate for 20 minutes rather than have a coffee in the afternoon. I exercise in the middle of the day just to break things up and give me energy. I go for a walk as well if I have a slump and I'm just finding it hard to retain information. Mostly, however, I am overwhelmed, and I think the only way to cope in 2024 is to give up on stemming the tide and plugging the dikes and trying to be the perfect productive unit. Instead, I work to a vibe, and I might just tell you how I do this. So I do tend to bite off more than I can chew. I'm aware that I do that. I've done it all my life. It's too exhausting to try to stop that habit, and so I figure that if I just bite it off, I will find a way to chew it later. And that's what works for me. It is not for everyone. But I am exhausted from trying to find a way to not be that person. You do reach a point where you stop fighting who you are. And to a certain extent, life does work out. I do trust the flow. I can't remember if it was D.H. Lawrence or F. Scott Fitzgerald. They tend to overlap in my brain a little. I think one of them said, anything that's for you will not pass you by. And so there's some sort of people that have really helped me with that. Barbara Sher, who I interviewed years and years ago, she wrote a book about what she calls scanners. And I think Anna and I can't remember who the second person was who asked the question. You are probably both scanners if you've asked this question of me. Scanners are people that do scan a lot of data points and have a lot of interests and are not perfectionists at anything in particular. And I'll put the post, the column that I wrote about that in the show notes, or I should say on Substack, so you can find that there. I found it super interesting and super helpful just to see myself as that person and to give up on being a specialist. I also tilt. Marcus Buckingham showed me how to do that. It's this idea of just rather than trying to find the perfect ratio of virtuous activities to do during the day. So, you know, I must do this much exercise. I must get this much sleep. I must have this much time working on this kind of a project or attending to this or that. I instead just tilt to what feels right in any given moment. And I did a podcast with Marcus quite recently, and I'll also put that in the Substack post because it is worth listening to again as a reminder. Now, to be able to tilt and to intuitively know what is the right thing to do in any given moment, as opposed to having these hard sort of linear strategies, it requires adopting a sort of a complex systems approach. And that terminology you may have heard me mention before here on Wild. It comes up a fair bit when we talk about collapse and the sort of the complexity of the problems in the world today. And systems thinking is the opposite of linear thinking, which is how the world has worked in the last 200-300 years. It's this idea of, you know, growth and progress as an imperative that's linear. It's very much something that feeds the neoliberal system, and it sort of compartmentalizes life into this kind of, you know, plodding along in a trajectory. And that's not how the world works anymore, and increasingly so. The world's complex. It works in swirls and complex interconnectedness. And so really we are fighting it tired if we're trying to make sort of linear judgments on things. So we have to join the systems thinking. And so over the last year or so, I've interviewed a number of people who have helped explain how to do that. So a lot of it is about working and using the body to make decisions, which sounds very woo-woo, but in fact the science now is really, really comprehensive and lines up with the way that the rest of the world's working and where we're needing to be able to move with the world, which is working in attunement with nature's systems. So to use your body, Annie Murphy-Paul has written a book on this, and I interviewed her probably about 9 months ago, and again, link in the Substack post. She talks about how most of our good thinking occurs outside the brain, and this idea of the brain as a computer is just redundant these days, and always has been, but is particularly redundant and ineffectual within a complex world. And so she teaches how to use looping, picking up on signals that our body is picking up on way faster than our brain can, and finding ways to access that information. And it's a really great way to access this tilting. Joel Pearson, who I spoke to probably just a couple of weeks ago, he shows how to use gut instinct for this, and that's very useful as well. So these are all skills I've picked up over the years and found to be useful because nothing else is working. That linear sort of productivity, structured way of doing things, it just doesn't work. So anyway, I think there was a secondary question in that, which was, do I have a switch off? No. But then I would rather work and research and learn and engage at this juncture in history than watch television, try to relax, because I think trying to relax is really kind of self-defeating. And really, I guess I create the space for that by simply not shopping. I know I say it a lot, but I do witness the world spending a lot of time, a lot of their decision-making muscle is spent making decisions around what they're going to buy and how they're going to store it and what kind of a person they're going to be when they own said thing. I can't recommend giving up shopping enough as a tactic for having a wonderful life in all kinds of ways. Okay, so to the second question, it's kind of related in part because another one of my hacks around sifting through information and ensuring I'm living a life where I'm prioritizing things and retaining stuff and regurgitating stuff and engaging with stuff in a way that makes me happy. One of my tips for this is activism, being engaged in the kind of stuff that I talk about, write about here on Wild and on my Substack. Activism gets me up in the day, up in the morning, every morning, fully clear on what it is that I want to be tilting towards. So I think Paula, Emma Kate, and Jackie, you were three of the people that asked me specifically about activism. You asked very similar questions, actually. You are activists and you're wondering where the fine line is essentially between taking up oxygen and then leaving space for those who are, I guess, affected by whatever it is that you're wanting to call out or engage in. So it's a really interesting question. I think there's definitely a lot to be said for not adding noise for the sake of ticking off the fact that you were in the arena screaming with everybody else. And I've noticed, across social media platforms, there's this tendency or there's this thing for calling out people who remain silent or aren't in the arena screaming, writing big long posts and resharing. I think the memes go, your silence will be remembered and that kind of thing. Pick a side. And I find that entirely ridiculous and unhelpful. And I'll explain why in a sec. What I do want to just cover off briefly, though, is that I think there's a lot to be said for instead of being in the one in the arena writing the posts, there's a lot to be said for instead supporting people who do go out on a limb to voice up, the people who have been activists in that space for a very long time, because leaders need followers. Not everybody can be the leader. We need right-hand people. We need the supporters. We need the critical mass to just simply put on a like, write a supportive comment, reshare a post without having to own a hot take. You can simply say, this is super interesting. I figured some of you might like to see it. Also, not everyone is a writer. Not everyone is great at doing social media. I mean, that's just a baseline consideration. So if you're, say, a website designer, in terms of being of service to the world right now, you are far better off reaching out to an organization who does great work and offering to make their website better or whatever it might be. So, yes, back to this idea of people on social media calling out people who are not in these big long posts and screaming out slogans. In many ways, some of that can feed the chaos that is distracting us from the discernment that the world needs right now. And I've written about this before, that just we really need to be careful that we're not adding to the chaos. Chaos is a tactic that is being used by both the left and the right, but predominantly the right, to keep us away from, you know, smoke and mirrors, it's bread and circuses. It's keeping us away from noticing what might be going on behind the scenes, what the core issues are. Often it's the core issue that we might be protesting about. And I'm thinking of the protests happening at the moment on American campuses. Just overnight, the attention has switched from what's happening in Palestine to, you know, these woke students and police brutality. And the heterodox and liberal media have made a meal out of something that should really be, they should really be supporting in principle. Instead, the issue's become about wokeness, and everybody's wanting to pounce and to have a hot take, and the purity, the importance of the original thing is being lost. And I remember Toni Morrison wrote about this. She talked about how racism is a form of distraction, and I think any kind of labeling can be a distraction. Sexism, racism, climate skepticism, anything that keeps the well-intentioned, those of us who are really wanting to shift things to better, being progressive, it keeps us tied up in defending ourselves against the slurs. It keeps us distracted. So does sidism. So that's something that I'd say let's be really careful about. And I'll put in the Substack post a meme that I did share on Instagram of a woman who was just holding a sign saying, "Could you please stop killing people?" And then there's two men walking past with business suits on saying, "Oh, extremists!" exclamation mark. It's kind of where we're at in so many ways. Now, I think it was Emma Kate. I think you made reference to the fact that you feel that as a white woman of privilege, you shouldn't be speaking up. You should be leaving the forums for those who have real felt experience in certain areas. What I would say to that is, I don't think your female privilege, your white woman privilege, should be the determiner here. If anything, you should be using it. So as a white woman, I am very aware that I can get away with more than a young person can, a young teenage boy can, a black person can. And so I'll often voice up. I will be the person who places the complaint. I remember being on a bus once and an inspector, the machine wasn't working. The inspector targeted a teenage boy. And I stood up and took that space and said, "Look, it wasn't working. You know, come and talk to me. Leave the kid alone." And that is something that I can do. I mean, I'm aware of the way that I look. I look like the most sensible. I'm wearing glasses and a stripy, you know, sort of bourgeois top. I look like a mother from a homo commercial. I mean, honestly, and I'm aware of that, and I work it. I work it particularly in this space. I can get away with far more controversial takes and opinions and perspectives, I think, because I look so mainstream. Anyway, I also like to get playful with that. And the older I get, the more so. So if you, of course, are a writer and you've got a bit of a community who might be interested in what you have to say, please do write the stuff if that is your expertise. And Emma Kate, you say that blokes don't tend to question themselves as you do, and other women do tend to do. And I think, I don't know when you asked that question, but it's kind of interesting that just this week our Prime Minister in Australia learned the hard way from perhaps not having a good hard look at himself, or having a little bit of a think before he decided to wade in with his hot take in an activist setting. So for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, in Australia there is a very, very hot debate happening quite wonderfully, and it's very overdue, of course, about violence against women. It's dialed up. It's always been an issue in Australia. It's generally been swept under the carpet, under the guise of we're an egalitarian, easygoing nation. How dare you question that with your claims of sexual violence or disadvantages against minority groups or against women, who, of course, are not a minority. So there were a bunch of rallies that were organised by a First Nations woman, a young woman who had been a survivor or is a survivor of domestic violence and I think other types of sexual violence. And the Prime Minister decided to get up on stage, even though he was asked not to, and decided to say a few words, which were of little consequence. I mean, if he got up and announced something monumental, that would have been wonderful. However, he didn't. But yes, it was probably inappropriate, and certainly inappropriate given that he was asked not to. So that's a wonderful display of what not to do. But I do think it was a bit of a wake-up call for men, and I've been seeing sort of the response in the media, but also on social media. I did actually go on to have a look at what was going on there during the week. And in my experience, this is actually something that happens a fair bit. Women, in the main, are the activists. They're on the front line. They do the work. That has been the case for eons. And men tend to wade in as an authority on the podium at the right juncture for them. They write the lofty opinion pieces with these defined, authoritative and linear positions. They tend to weigh things up in left versus right terms, which then, of course, creates more chaos. And we see this with the way that many of these issues tend to play out in the media with male commentators predominantly. But it's not really landing so well anymore. And I think the reason for that is because we are increasingly facing these complex systemic issues where linear didactic hot takes are just not matching up and come across as quite ludicrous. So I need to cut this off pretty soon. What I mean to say is I need to end this rant fairly soon. So I suppose my message to men listening, as a sort of a separate note, and I think this should land well given where Australian audiences are at the moment and where a lot of men are at, I feel, as they come alive to this very issue, possibly for the first time. The invite there is to get comfortable with supporting women and young people and minorities who are already in the space and are doing the work and have done the work for some time and know what they're talking about. The invite is to not bring anyone down who is in that space, particularly anyone you agree with. You know, just simply having a hot take and pulling apart maybe the methodologies or where you feel you might differ in opinion slightly, it doesn't help at the moment. Instead, focus on building people up, building us up, and using your privilege, your power, your whiteness, your maleness, whatever it might be, your skills, bring it to the situation because it's really, really wanted, needed, and welcomed. So to all of this end, I went off on a few tangents there, but I hope I answered the questions that I was being asked. But yes, to all of this end, I'm going to have a bit of a break from Wild for a couple of episodes or a couple of weeks because I do need to get some focused work done. Information on Slort is a little bit too much at the moment. As I say, I'll set up a sort of a challenge here on Substack for anyone interested to, I don't know, cut out information overload. It'll be a pretty straightforward thing. Take part if you like. Nothing onerous, just about getting us all a little lighter and a little okay about tilting and being in the complexity, being in attunement with where life is at the moment. Okay, so stay wild, stay loose, stay in the complexity, and I won't see you here for a couple of weeks, but I will be on Substack, not so much on Instagram or Facebook. Okay, see you later. Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.